Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to start off the show talking a little bit about my past. When I was a kid, I was bullied a lot, and I was very frightened. I wasn't a big, strong-looking kid, and people took advantage of that. It was a frightening time, and I didn't really feel safe until I studied karate and actually became a black belt. Then I felt somewhat invincible and actually had to deal with some bullies after that in a very diplomatic way, actually. And it was very helpful to believe in myself more and know that I could be strong. But then as I became an adult, and I did get my black belt as a young adult, I found that bullying isn't just physical. There are many ways that we can be bullied in life. And so I'm glad to do another radio show about bullying. And this one is because I've read a wonderful book called The Bully's Trap, Bullying in the Workplace. And so I'm so glad to interview the author of The Bully's Trap, Andrew Fass. Andrew, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter.
This is quite an undertaking to talk about something that most people are in denial of. Most people don't want to know about bullying because it can ruin reputations in the workplace. Most CEOs don't want to acknowledge it, right?
Well, that's true. And the best example of that is the expose in the New York Times a few weeks ago on Amazon, and the description of it, if 25% of it is true, it's a modern-day sweatshop, and bullying is rampant. But the CEO's comment was, quote, that's not the Amazon I know. That is very telling in terms of either he doesn't know what's going on in his organization, or he knows what's going on, and it's a deflection.
Sure, because it's hard to attract good talent when you're known as a bullying organization. There's so many incidences out there where people are behaving in ways that they don't realize. They think they're being competitive and normally aggressive, but there are ways that that gets abused before people even realize that they're over-competitive in ways that are really unkind to people.
In my book, I don't dwell too much on the rehabilitation of the bully. The reason I don't is that people behave in a way that is consistent with what they believe the expectations are.
In the culture.
So often people ask me, well, why do bullies bully? And I said, my answer is simply because they can. In many instances, it's even encouraged, definitely condoned, but encouraged. And the loudest voice in the room or the bully ends up becoming a hero and garners more credibility because of the
Right. The targets often, because they're targeted, start misbehaving in their own way. They're disgruntled. They're unhappy. They don't perform as well.
Absolutely. And the title of the book is The Bully's Trap. And the reason it's called that is most people who are targeted become what the bully wants them to become. And that is going from a good performer with a good attitude to a poor performer with a bad attitude. And in essence, the bully has the target or the victim become the villain. And once they change their work habits,
Right, and that's the purpose of some of the bullying out there, is to discredit employees and give them a bad record, and therefore they have the right to fire them for cause, and maybe even disallow whatever severance they might have had.
That's absolutely correct. It is a severance avoidance tactic. Also, in many cases, it's a method by which an organization can cull people who become a pension liability. So they reach a certain age, 45, with 10-year service, all of a sudden they become a pension liability if it's in a defined pension plan. So they feel that it's better to reduce their labor costs, reduce their pension liability, and avoid severance. So the method by which they do that is to force the people out.
That happened actually in my family. A family member had worked for a company for many years, and his retirement income that he depended on had to be solidified, I guess, at some point. And a few weeks before that, he was let go so that they didn't have to own up to what they owed him for all those years of service.
I would suggest to you that most people in your audience that would resonate with, because they've had somebody, they've either themselves or had somebody close to them go through that.
One of the reasons that people are bullied is to and replace them for whatever reasons they might have. Sometimes people are just too smart. They're too good at their job. And it makes people uncomfortable because not everybody wants to be seen in whatever failures they might feel responsible for.
That's, again, one of the motives is if a employee or a coworker is a threat to them because the target is outperforming or outshining them in a presentation, for example, that is a real threat to their power and authority. It's one of the big motivators in terms of many bullies, in terms of discrediting them and to the point that they are forced out.
There are other reasons why bullies behave the way they do. Sometimes they're just nasty.
It is man's inhumanity to man. A recent example where a photographer in Hungary tripped a refugee or migrant who was running with a child to get out and intentionally tripped the individual.
I saw that video.
It's out there, and it's unfortunately part of human nature. Getting back to the premise of the book is to change a culture in an organization where that type of behavior, and it can be very subtle behaviors, so once they're identified, there is no tolerance for it, regardless of how much the bully brings to the table.
It depends on the CEO.
Totally. And also the board of directors.
Yeah, and sometimes the board of directors is bullied by a CEO, or the vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. It works both ways. And part of it, preoccupation with short-term results. Any values that an organization have in the way they operate, if results aren't where they think the investors think they should be on any given quarter, the values are pretty much discarded.
People get rewarded for short-term goals at any cost.
So what is not measured, in my view, should be measured, is how results are achieved. It's a total culture issue.
And so a lot of times a board of directors will create an environment or ask the CEO to create an environment that is honorable.
Yes. Forward-thinking boards of directors who are interested in long-term growth and profitability would ensure that all stakeholders are represented and factored into the equation.
So what are things that companies can do to manage their culture better? What systems can they put in place?
The first step is understanding it. And from my perspective in the work I do with organizations, I'm amazed at the disconnect between the reality of what is going on in the workplace to what the perception at the top is. And I've gotten a lot of pushback from executives who indicate that I'm a bit extreme or I exaggerate the issue and the opportunity and indicate that they've got feedback mechanisms from engagement surveys
Interesting.
People do not trust the
survey
assistance programs that are made available if it's a toxic environment.
So they'll deny everything anyway.
And what happens is the CEO and the board would get filtered data indicating all is well. And until something like what happened at Amazon is an example, it becomes and it should become a wake-up call to the board of directors to say there's something amiss here, and what is it we have to do? So the first step is really understanding what is going on in the workplace. Easy to find out by information that they keep records of, attrition rates, absenteeism, the correlation between how customers feel to how employees feel, the number of workarounds that have to be done, or mistakes in a process.
Or maybe even the suicide rate among the employees.
Well, absolutely, and that's a tough one to nail, because when you read the bits in the paper, when you see somebody aged from mid to late 30s to mid to late 50s died suddenly, I would suggest to you that most of those cases, it's suicide. And in most of those cases, it's suicide where bullying is a factor.
It's amazing how toxic environments are. I'm sure a lot of our audience work in toxic environments and are very upset about it, and we'll talk about how they can better protect themselves in those environments.
Well, over 50% of your audience who are in the workforce work in a toxic environment. But the first piece of advice I give to people is read my book.
Yeah, your book is great.
But the first piece of advice is don't deal with it alone.
Good.
And in many instances, people who are targeted don't realize that they are targeted until the bully has achieved what he wants to achieve. And we hear and read a lot about bullying in schools, and in most cases in schools, it's very overt. So the student who is bullied knows what's going on. Bullying in the workplace is far more subtle and complex, and it usually starts in a small way and gradually grows, where the bully starts by setting unrealistic expectations or withholding information that the person needs to be able to do their job or give a presentation, or they're shunned or they're gossiped about. And when those things start happening, very tough thing to fight.
And what people really need to do is to start making records.
Absolutely. And tie seemingly unrelated comments, events, and situations together, and they usually add up to something. And soon as a person recognizes their gut, their instinct tells them that there's something amiss. And one incident will not tell them the whole story. But when they start recording it, sequencing it, then the story will come out.
Now, the organization itself might not be sensitive to this kind of record keeping, and you could go to a higher up and say, look, this is the way I've been treated, and the higher up might want to protect the person who's doing the bullying.
In most cases, that happens.
So in that case, the records really might be helpful if it gets worse to the point where the person is terminated, and then they can actually consult a lawyer.
Well, that definitely helps when it comes to dismissal or being forced out or constructive dismissal. However, if the climate in an organization is such that there's a renegade bully out there, and that is not something that they
will tolerate.
I've had many instances where people have taken the information either directly to the bully or to someone they trust in the organization and say, listen, I need some help here. Here's what is going on, and I don't think I'm imagining it, and you tell me whether I'm being paranoid or not.
Right, and having a list of incidences that were obviously bullied incidences. And so we're looking at different ways that people can be bullied so that it can be understood as bullying.
Yes.
Because there is aggression in the workplace, and that often can be very constructive.
Well, I think that's where you differentiate between an aggressive management style versus an abusive management style, where it can be said nicely, and the reaction from the bully is, well, I was only kidding, or that's just my style. You can nail down what is the intention of the bully. And if the intention of the bully is to make that person look bad, and if the intention is to force that person out, then it's bullying.
And bystanders don't always help.
No, that goes back to the beginning of time. So if we look at where there has been genocide, the course of history would have been a lot different had the bystanders become more of a witness, a defender, and a resister. The same is true in the workplace.
Right.
And what I've experienced in organizations I've worked with is people have known all along that this was taking place.
Right. There's been research.
All along that there's been wrongdoing in an organization, and they have not become that witness, defender, and resister. And in many organizations, it's very tough to do because...
Then they'll get bullied, too.
In a toxic environment, the messenger gets shot.
Right.
And whistleblowers are retaliated against, particularly if the whistle is blown at people who are at the top.
Right. There's been research about empathy, and most of the time the research proves that in this country, in the U.S., I know you're in Canada, but in the U.S., only about 20% of the population are empathetic. And that says a lot, that only 20% are there.
Yeah, it's not a great statistic.
Right. But what it means is that people put the culture ahead of their principles.
Yeah, and I think it's not because they don't have the values to be empathetic, because I think they look at what is going on in their environment as, well, that's just the way it is, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Or that I think that they think more tribally, and their priorities are to support the tribe, which could be the company, could be, you know, any organization can be a tribe, and their priorities are to support the tribe ahead of the individual.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of research about how destructive people can become in a bad environment.
Well, no question. And the destruction doesn't stop when they walk out of the door of the workplace. The family unit takes a huge, huge hit. We're looking at doing some research in terms of what happens to children, one of whose parents are targeted to become an addict and or develop post-traumatic stress disorder. What does that do to the family unit? And then what's the impact on the children as they go into their careers?
I think that's very important. Bullying has so many results in the other parts of our lives that are devastating to our health, to our family cohesion. That's why a lot of people who are bullied can either become suicidal, or sometimes they become mass murderers.
That's absolutely correct. Going postal, and I raise a few eyebrows, and not everybody agrees with me on the German Air catastrophe earlier this year. Crashed into a mountain, killing I know how many hundred people. And the question that I asked was obviously a villain.
Right, he was suicidal and took everybody with him.
In so much that he did that. But is it possible that he was also a victim?
Interesting.
There's always, always, always red flags.
In your book, you talk about Lehman Brothers, and it's interesting because I didn't know about them. I just felt sorry that they went out of business due to a bad economy. And you talk about the CEO of that organization was a CBO, Chief Bullying Officer, and that the whole organization was blind to bullying, and their demise really was a result of a toxic environment.
Absolutely. Even more importantly, had people in the know come forward earlier, the whole financial meltdown could have been avoided, and they didn't because they were afraid.
Yeah, that's the problem with whistleblowing.
A great movie called And it's the very same dynamics at play.
And it's interesting that Bloomberg, when he was mayor, he didn't want New York State legislation that would protect employees from abuse because he felt it would make companies in New York non-competitive.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Those comments and people behind them, they look at this as an issue versus an opportunity. And there are studies out there that talk about organizations who have high level of engagement or happy people outperforming those who have toxic cultures.
Right.
Low engagement.
Sure. Toxic cultures really create a dysfunctional business.
Gallup did a survey not that long ago. Well, they do an annual one on state of the workforce, and it indicates in North America it's just under 30% of employees are engaged.
Yep. And just think how productive we could all be.
And other studies out there that indicate that where there is a higher level of engagement, you can boost productivity by at least 10%. And if people recognized and appreciated that, then that would motivate boards of directors and CEOs to really first, again, understand the culture that they are operating in, and then doing things that would encourage people to become engaged. And as a result of that, they will have a much improved productivity, which would translate into sustainable growth, which translates into better profits, and their ability to attract and retain the right people. That's the sell.
Now let's talk about when people are applying for a job. How do you know that you're not entering a bullying environment?
Well, I covered that in my book.
Yes, very well.
Advising people what to look for in changing an organization. And many people who are targeted feel that, well, maybe it's best that I leave. And that may be the best solution for them, but it certainly should not be the first answer to what they're going through, because they may transfer into a environment that is much worse. So in my book, I outline some of the things. There's a number of things that they can ask in the interview and research on the web, and people that they can talk to about what they're likely to face when they join that company.
And recruiters aren't necessarily trustworthy.
That's a pretty general statement.
Yes, but a lot of times they want to make the sale.
They want to place people, and if they're not measured based on the tenure of the person they place, then they would likely not do the kind of work that they should on behalf of the candidate to ensure that it's a proper fit.
Right. And so recruiters should be told that they need to be held responsible if the job isn't what they say it is.
Absolutely. Because they're usually pulling a person away from another organization unless they're totally transparent on the risks that a person will face in a new environment. They are doing a total disservice to both the organization and the new hire.
So there are a lot of things that people should look for when they're applying for a job, do their own due diligence.
Yes.
And also,
and one of the basic questions is, okay, who am I replacing and why did they leave?
Sure. And also even know that it's helpful if a company is going to do a psychological assessment of them.
Any organization that hires a person in authority should go through a independent psychological assessment.
But to know that companies do that is assuring.
If there's one magic bullet out there, it is that. But it is a test to say that would this person work well in this environment? Would identify
dysfunction
that are capable of abusive behavior.
Right. And so to know that they're giving you this test, know that they've given it to others. And so there's a likelihood that your boss will have taken this test and might not be a psychopath.
Absolutely.
Right.
I tell the story of one organization the organization. They were not happy with the overall results. They attributed that to a CEO who they considered soft, and they replaced him with a tyrant. And this is an organization that had as a requirement for anybody, including the CEO, to do a psychological assessment, and they chose to ignore the assessment.
Yeah, you talk about that in the book. It's amazing. We're coming to the end of the show, so I want to thank you so much for the book and for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's really helpful to understand the world that we're trying to work in and do good jobs in and understand it better. So,
well, Andrew, thank you for reaching out to me and having me on your show. And I wrote the book not for the sake of writing the book, but to get a discussion going on what I think is a critical issue, and interviews such as this helps the dialogue and debate that's so necessary.
Now, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do, www.andrewfoss.com.
Okay, Andrew Foss, it's so good to talk with you, and thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you, Peter, and it's been a pleasure chatting.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.